Our NFB of Maryland Employment Committee has been hard at work planning programming for job seekers and those who are blind and want to advance in their jobs. You hopefully attended a truly excellent seminar yesterday. This next panel is also brought to you by our Employment Committee. Tony Stevens is the Executive Director of the Downtown Sailing Center. Hello. Laura Havard is a medical social worker. Donald Porterfield, you might have met him once, is a criminal prosecutor. All of them are blind, and all of them have interesting jobs that some may believe a blind person cannot easily or effectively do. You are going to hear about why those people would be wrong. Janice Forbes and Pam Goodman, the chairs of our committee, will moderate this panel. Please welcome this wonderful panel.
Good afternoon. Hi, I'm Pam, and we have three special guests with us today to talk about their very interesting careers. And we'll just get right to it, because I want to hear from them. I don't know about y'all. I want to hear from them. So, if you will, Laura, introduce yourself, and then give us a little information about why your career... What is most rewarding about your chosen career? So if you could tell us where you work and your title.
Good morning, everyone. Afternoon, I guess. My name is Laura Havard, and I am a clinical social worker. I work in a military organization, and I've been there for many decades. Hopefully this is better. Sorry, I'm just practicing. I'm a medical social worker in an inpatient hospital setting. I work with surgical and medical patients. And I work on a team, multiple teams, therapists, physical therapists, occupational, nursing, whole host of doctors, changing all the time. So what do I do? Well, first of all, how large is this organization? At least 5,000 employees, contractors, civilian, active duty, support people. And I'm a clinical social worker, not administrative, so I'm an independent provider. I have been trained with a master's degree, a license, a lot of training, and a lot of scrutiny of what I do and how I do it. Very critical role. And what I do is I work with the patients and their families, helping them understand their medical condition, their surgical, understand what it means, and working with their limitations and strengths, helping them move on to the next level of care. Hospital is a difficult place to be and very stressful. So I just kind of help them through that process, talk about what the doctors have told them, help them understand questions, problem solve, what's going to happen next to them, what does it mean to them? You know, are they, in terms of socially, who will help make decisions, who will help them, who will not help them, who will not make decisions because they think they can stay at our hospital for long-term care, and they sometimes do. Working with difficult patients and families, irate, feeling that what they had happened to them is unfair. Why can't they just stay forever? And my job is to help them understand and move on to the next level of care. So it's a very quick-moving, fast-moving, ever-changing host of patients, families, and characters.
Great. Thank you very much, Laura. And where's Tony?
Ahoy, everybody. How's everyone doing? Oh, wonderful. I like hearing that. Good afternoon. I'm Tony Stevens. I'm the executive director for the Downtown Sailing Center down on Baltimore Harbor. I live down in Federal Hill. And since my job is to train sailors, I'm glad that I'm not here listening to how Notre Dame is beating Navy today at M&T Stadium, which is four blocks from my house. Why is what I'm doing fulfilling? I mean, well, first off, at the end of the day, I have the best job in the world because as stressful as being an executive director for any nonprofit, especially coming out of the pandemic, and we were very concerned with COVID and all those things around relating to just life in this brave new world, right? You know, I get to walk down on some docks and relax and listen to the sound of the waves from Baltimore Harbor slowly lap against the side of the boats. And that's the most therapeutic thing. If anybody has ever been on the water, it is extremely therapeutic. There's research and studies that say, you know, that the psychological benefits of just being near water, I don't know if it's some genetic thing, if it's some primitive thing, but it actually improves the quality of life for people. Unless, of course, you're swimming in Baltimore Harbor, and then that's another illness you might take on. But to that end, we do everything we can at the Downtown Sailing Center. It's a community-based sailing center to make sure people don't fall in the water. We have about 400 campers we bring in each year. But the thing that got me involved was the adaptive sailing program. I don't know if anybody has ever gone sailing down there or not. Nice to hear. I know they, in past iterations, prior to my coming on board, I know we used to do a lot with the NFB and with the Maryland School for the Blind. I'm excited to be working to bring those programs back. So keep your ears out for next summer because we want to get everybody in this room on the water. We have adaptive sailing events every other Saturday in the season, but we're working more about making a community that is fully inclusive. And I think that's one of the things that really sold me on the Downtown Sailing Center. There are other organizations around the country, even within the Washington, D.C. area, that focus on making recreation in this nature of being out on a boat on the water, you know, something for people with disabilities. But what was great for me at the Downtown Sailing Center was it was a genuine community. And I got involved in that community with my two sons. I got a 10 and a 12-year-old, and they were novice sailors, you know, themselves, and have become much better sailors, probably better than myself. And then also I got involved through the volunteering in the adaptive sailing program. And this is one of the things I want to talk about in terms of employment is the volunteering hook, right? For 33 years, I've worked in nonprofits. It's been extremely beneficial. I've always been tied to communications, relationship building, fundraising. It's all about, for me, you know, I was trained as a journalist and a storyteller in college and grad school, but it's all about telling stories. And for me, you know, the chance to move through the nonprofit careers in different roles, even in the blindness world for about a decade in various operations within our blindness advocacy, which gave me a chance to work with some of you all alongside as well. But in this particular role, I think the thing that's most beneficial is that, you know, it meets my own personal mission. And if you can find a job that opens that door, and again, my door opened up here through volunteering. I became a volunteer, showed them that I knew something about nonprofits, so they asked me to be on the board. And then when we ran into a rut last year in trying to find someone to fill the executive director, I guess I drew the short straw. And so, you know, I came on board this past summer as the executive director. But it was really, you know, I think everyone here probably volunteers on some level, if it's through your local chapter or whatever way have you. But that was the doorway into this position. And it's been the doorway into a lot of my jobs in the nonprofit sector is just by volunteering and being present. And that's where you get to prove yourself to people to break down those stereotypes and misconceptions. When they actually see you perform, then it changes their own world of the way they look at things. So, you know, it's extremely fulfilling. It's extremely stressful. Don't get me wrong. Ask anybody, Anil or, you know, those that are executive directors can talk about it. But at the end of the day, I get to sit by the water like Otis Redding on the dock of the bay, and that's life lessons there.
Thank you so much. Perfect. And Mr. Donald Porterfield, will you please introduce yourself again and tell us why your career is so rewarding?
Okay. So as the introduction said, I am a criminal prosecutor. I prosecute felony crimes in Pima County, Arizona, anywhere starting at the top with second-degree murder cases, all the way down to something as simple as fleeing law enforcement. I do it because of sort of the title that they've attached to prosecutors. We're referred to in the criminal justice system as ministers of justice. And that's because we control a significant part of how the criminal justice system is going to work. A crime cannot be charged against an individual unless the prosecutor agrees to do so. Police can arrest individuals, but they can't officially bring charges that a person has to stand before a court and decide whether or not they're going to plead guilty or not guilty. And so as a prosecutor, what's really, really rewarding for me is that I work within the system to bring about change in the criminal justice system. You know, the criminal justice system penalizes individuals of, you know, the black and brown persuasion or people from lower socioeconomic conditions or individuals who, you know, have other sort of disparate or separate conditions that separate them from the majority of what society looks like or acts like. And so in my role, you know, I review case evidence and make a decision as to how we're going to go forward, whether or not there's enough evidence to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, whether or not there's been constitutional violations that warrant that we dismiss a case or that we you know, not go forward with specific pieces of evidence. As a minister of justice, you know, I work for the state, but my obligation is to protect the rights of all people that are involved. That includes the defendant, an individual charged with a crime, a victim of crime, and as well as, you know, my singular client, the state, you know, making sure that, you know, that the laws are, you know, are enforced equally. So my job to me is rewarding. I'm a trial attorney. I spend an awful lot of time in court, presenting evidence, arguing the state's position, and counter arguing, you know, my opponent or the defense counsel's position. And at the end of the day, you know, I think I walk away knowing that I've fulfilled my obligation as a minister of justice. And you know, some individuals that are charged, you know, they end up with light sentences and with a rehabilitation. But you know, until we as society learn to live together and to treat equally, or each and every one of us equally within society, just like we believe with the National Federation of the Blind, we have, you know, the right to live equally, independently, and to be treated with respect in this system, and until everybody does that, and you know, and treats others equally, the criminal justice system is sort of an essential tool, and I get to work within that system to make sure that everybody is treated fairly, that the law is applied equally and equitably. And at the end of the day, that as a minister of justice, I've served justice and not just the criminal justice system. So my job is very rewarding in that regard.
Good afternoon. My name is Janice Forbes, and I am also co-chair for Maryland's Employment Committee. And I have a question for Donald. You actually ended right where I wanted to start. What would you consider your best career accomplishment so far?
So my best career accomplishment, well, you know, as a prosecutor, you know, we spend a lot of time. I spend a lot of time in trial. One of my greatest accomplishments was, of course, my first homicide trial, which was a second degree murder trial. I co-tried this with my supervisor. We had about 30 or 40 witnesses, probably 80 or 90 pieces of evidence that had to be presented. We present, you know, physical, tangible evidence. We present digital evidence. But I was asked to do the opening statement for that. We have a sort of our policy and our practice in our office is that an opening statement is done entirely without notes. There in addition to the individual that was you know murdered, we had five other victims. There were, I think, 18 different felony criminal charges, and I did the opening. I delivered it. It was the first time that my wife actually got to see me perform in a trial. And
And I led off in terms of the direct examination, you know, of the witnesses. So a lot of trust was put into me by my supervisor, who actually got it. And when I say got it, he understood that as a blind individual, I didn't do things the same way that he did, but he allowed me to use the tools and the techniques that allowed me to compete equally in a courtroom. We secured a conviction, and the victims were extremely pleased. But that was a highlight, you know, just that first, you know, homicide trial where a lot of trust was placed on me.
Well, for me, there's not one accomplishment. As a clinical social worker, I'm working with patients and their families. I help them through stressful situation. I give them support, calmness, problem solving. And so I get real satisfaction from my patients, but I'm also recognized as a resource, a strength, and basically a light of understanding what stress can look like, what difficulty, and how you move through that in spite of difficult situations. So, and especially since it's been many decades that I've been doing this, and I'm recognized as that ability to go into a patient's room for the first time and try to connect with them quickly, understand what they're going, empathize, help them move on. So that's a continual process. It's a give and take, but understanding that it is a stressful, difficult scenario to be in a hospital. It's very vulnerable and lonely, and knowing what that can feel like. So it's one after the other of patients and families and interactions. Many times I see them again. Many times I see them in the hallways. So it's a combination of those multiple interactions and what they teach me and what I can teach them.
Thank you. All right, and the same question. Wow, that's a tough question. Because, how do we measure accomplishments, right? Yeah, what made me most satisfied. So I'm a cat. I've had about, I don't want to say 9 lives. I've had at least 7 lives. So I'm down to 2 more to go. But I for 7 years I was in formation to become a Catholic priest, which, again, my whole life has been sort of in service and very humbling. But I was in a group called the Jesuits, and we were based in Detroit, inner city Detroit, downtown. And going back to the volunteering, it's just the people you work with, right? When you have a chance to work alongside people, and you gel. And there was one Christmas where a few of us knew how to play music, and we got together and we went down to there's a homeless shelter that's an old church right on the Detroit River in downtown Detroit. It's an old cathedral, the St. Peter and Paul, but now it's a homeless shelter. And a couple of us played music, and we went down there and we learned the Charlie Brown Christmas album, the Vince Guaraldi. Does anybody know that? And so I played bass. Another guy named played piano. We had a saxophone player. And for about, I've had the opportunity to speak in huge, huge crowds over the decades. But that day I had a chance with some cohorts for work. It was an after hours thing. But we went and we played that for them for 12 people that were homeless right before Christmas. And, for me, it's just about a work that makes you feel good at the end of the day. And that was probably the best feeling I ever had going to bed that night. Just, the little things you do in terms of with those you work with to make the world a better place.
Thank you so much. And if we could, do we have time, Ronza, for one more quick question?
Yeah.
Okay, very quickly, Laura, if you could share how you overcome some of your day-to-day challenges, how you persevere, how you light it on fire.
Wow. Well, let me just give you a little understanding of what some of the challenges are, and then ones you can overcome and ones you have to somehow live through. Challenging of being in a very large organization, very bureaucratic, not changing very quickly, recognizing I'm probably the only blind provider in a clinical setting in the entire organization and probably the overarching agency that serves our organization. And then me having to provide clinical services with patients and families, working with them for an hour, and then moving on to what's their disposition, what do they need, what services would help them move through the system. Are they going home or to a rehab, or, you know, are there some social and emotional issues that need to be resolved? And the hospital is a very quick moving place. It changes through the day and the days. Length of stay is very short. And the other thing that's really difficult and is a challenge is my clinical interacts with administrative / technical. So I used to have a full-time reader almost 8 years ago. He died from cancer, and from then ever forth, we've been making these, I'd call them using administrative staff with a different focus in not being 100% to me. So, you know, I'm making sure that they're doing what's requested, they take much longer, monitoring what they do, and the electronic medical record, we've all heard of that. Presently, it's not accessible, so someone sighted would be able to just click through the medical record, pull the items they need, and move it to a protected view kind of mode out to the referral sources. And that takes minutes, and the way I have to do it is very much more laborious. So recognizing there's a major disconnect. Being able to interact with the medical record, know what's in it, and it's changing through the day. And so how have I resolved all this? Well, recognizing some things can be changed, some things have to be maybe makeshift to the best of your ability, and being resourceful. So one example was I had major issue with administrative staff, and it wasn't working. So I presented 4 bullet points clearly, calmly. I had solutions. Every supervisor and service chief wants solutions, and they want to be attainable and not costly and not additional staff. And that's a lot to ask for when the solution is only minimally workable. So I was able to do it. I got 3 out of the 4 recommendations I made, and they were implemented. And recognizing which ones can be done, and when they say we don't have staff, you can push back, but you also have to, you know, realize how many things you can win and what you'll do to get around it. So that's basically it. And recognizing using relationships. Relationships are very good if you've been in an organization. You know, cultivate them. Check in to see what they need. Barter services. So when you need something, maybe they can help you solve a problem. How can we fix it? So those are a few things that I've utilized. It's always an emerging issue. Problems keep popping up, and you have to be resourceful. Thanks.
Hopefully we can follow up with Donald and Tony another way, because we're out of time. We still have some excellent presenters this afternoon, so I'll turn it back over to Ronza.